Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's grown to hate you, and she's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
It's almost 52 years so far, the world has become a worse and worse place. Every year we have polluted more water than the year before. Every year there's been less clean air than there was the year before that.
Welcome to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM this March 8th, 2016 edition, episode 80 of Nature Bats Last. Comes to you live from the Mud Hut in southern New Mexico with our live studio audience.
Yay!
30,000 strong.
JP is listening, perhaps for the first time. Shout out to JP.
Shout out to JP.
Woo!
All right. Word. Our thanks to Afrozen for his theme song contribution. You can find more of his work on SoundCloud.com. And we are doing a call-in show as well, so you can call us at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888 if you have any questions for Guy or myself or our guest today. Today we are joined by award-winning author Marty Essen. Marty created Around the World in 90 Minutes, a high-energy show lecture that features interesting facts, humorous stories, and the best of thousands of photos Marty took while traveling the world for his book, Cool Creatures, Hot Planet, Exploring the Seven Continents. One part lecture, one part theater, one part slideshow, one part comedy. Around the World in 90 Minutes is the type of show where the audience has fun laughing at the stories, oohing and aahing at the photos, and then when it's all done, they just realize that they've actually learned something. Marty's second book was published in January of this year, Endangered Edens, Exploring the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, Costa Rica, the Everglades, and Puerto Rico, is filled with photographs and focuses on the four locations listed in the title. You can learn more about Marty at martyessen.com. Thanks for joining us on Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. Marty.
That was
are you
awkward.
There?
Marty, are you with us?
I'm here.
Oh, hey. Welcome to the show.
You couldn't hear me? I could hear you.
Now we can.
Okay. Well, good to talk with you guys.
Your bio indicates that your presentations on college campuses, and you say when it's all said and done, they realize just how much they have learned. So maybe fill us in on what they learn.
Well, you know, lots of things. One of the things, for instance, I talk about in my show Around the World in 90 Minutes and also in my books is, you know, animals that have a bad reputation that people might want to wipe off the face of the map. And one of my favorite things is to show people how that animal is valuable. And one of the examples I use in both my book and my show is vampire bats. In my show, I show this photo, a close-up photo of this vampire bat. I had walked into this cave filled with hundreds of vampire bats. And they're little guys, they're only about 2 or 3 inches long. And vampire bats have the most effective anticoagulant known to man in their saliva. Well, how does that benefit humans? Well, scientists have taken that anticoagulant and they've turned it into a life-saving heart drug called Draculin. Great name, huh?
Yeah.
And Draculin is given to heart patients, people who have had heart attacks or strokes. So here's an example of a creature somebody might want to wipe off the face of the planet that is actually saving human lives all over the world. In fact, there are just tons and tons of different animal and plant life that we don't even know about yet that are going to have all these different benefits for humans. In fact, I was just reading in Nature magazine that just came in yesterday about all these venomous species. They're going to be able to take the venom and turn it into painkillers that are going to be non-addictive. And so, you know, that's an example of you know, what I get people to understand during my show. I also, of course, talk about global warming. And I think a good example that I have is we go up into Canada, and there is this huge glacier called the Bear Glacier. And it's a gorgeous glacier, but in front of this glacier is a lake that was not there 55 years ago. Well, of course, why is that lake there? Well, it's there because of human-caused global warming. And so one of the things I'm able to do is both through my talking to people, through my book, and through my photography is actually show people hard evidence of what is happening.
So, I mean, do you meet a fair amount of resistance as in deniers on college campuses about climate change when you reach that subject?
Good question. You know, it's something when I started doing this show back in 2008, and it was something I was worried about. I thought, you know, I'm going to get people heckling me, and in all of the hundreds and hundreds of college shows that I've done, only once has anybody ever heckled me or brought up any resistance to it, because I think, you know, I'm talking on a university campus, and these university students have science teachers, and
right.
So I think they're actually much more educated than you know somebody in their 60s watching Fox News who doesn't understand what you know peer reviewed studies are and doesn't understand that these scientists aren't making huge amount of monies and driving around in Rolls Royces with all the money they've made off of claiming that global warming exists. And so, no, on campuses, there really is not much resistance. But what I'm trying to do on the campuses is not only give the students more information to have at their fingertips, but also get them involved, get them excited, get them going out there and speaking out.
Are you? Wait. Do I have to give up my Rolls Royce? Is that what you're saying?
So, I mean, I guess what you're, you know, obviously your audience is college students, but what type of college student are we talking about? Are these students that are majoring in things that are environmental, or is it a mixed bag? Or
well, it's a mixed bag. In fact, most of the events that I do at colleges, you know, they're usually 7 o'clock in the evening, and it's open to the public. So,
okay.
I get students. You know, I'll get science students. I get photography students. I'll get international studies students. And then we also get people from the community. I also get a lot of homeschooled students, which are people I really want to speak to, and some of the homeschool students that come, because they may not get that background, and they may not understand, you know, some of these things that a college student that has access to a science teacher might understand better.
Yeah, in your book and maybe in your presentations, there's no mention of abrupt climate change. So, do you talk about that issue on college campuses? And if so, what kind of response do you get?
Well, you know, I guess I don't use the word abrupt. I think that's kind of self-evident to me. What's happening? You know, I'm talking about. I'm showing, for instance, as I mentioned, the glacier and that lake that wasn't there 55 years ago. That's pretty abrupt. Another time where I talk about it is when I'm down in Antarctica, and I've got this picture of this ice cliff at the coast of Antarctica, and then you can see how the ice goes way up and continues in this dome. And I kind of use this as an example, not so much for an example of global warming happening, but for how global warming can affect us here in the United States, because that's what people are interested in. How is it going to affect me? Well,
right.
You see how much ice and how much water there is, frozen water, on Antarctica, and I explained to the students that this isn't like the example some people use. Well, if you put an ice cube in a glass and it melts, it doesn't raise the water. Well, it's completely different because Antarctica is on solid ground, And so when you've got this mountain and mountains and mountains and mountains of ice, when that does melt, that is big enough, that is going to affect places like the Everglades that I talk about in my new book, Endangered Edens, and how, you know, you've got a place like the Everglades where it's low as far as elevation, and it doesn't take much of rising sea levels for salt water to work its way into the Everglades and destroy that beautiful area.
Right. You know, Guy and I, we go out and speak as well, and it seems to me that we meet the area where we meet resistance is when we start to talk about the living arrangement, which, you know, all of us are surviving under, so to speak, in, you know, the industrial model. And do you breach that subject at all about, you know, the way we live, particularly in this culture?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I let me think about this for a second. I guess I talk about it in the fact that, yeah, you know, we all need to do our part. But I'm a big believer, you know, that in addition to doing our part, we really need government assistance on this. I don't think that we can all, by just recycling and putting in fluorescent lights, that we can save the planet on our own. We really need to get the government involved, be it the government putting massive amounts of money into studying to come up with alternatives. I mean, there are obviously some renewable energy alternatives we haven't even thought of yet. And, you know, I'm a big believer, and we need to put money into that. You know, as a lot of people say, we need an Apollo project, put the Apollo project on renewable energy. And I think that's how we're going to solve things, more than hoping your neighbor down the street is turning off the lights when he leaves the bathroom. We really need to do it on a much more massive scale. Otherwise, it's going to be too late.
Right.
Did that answer your question?
So, finish.
Yeah, I mean, we're coming at it from a slightly different point of view, which I think Guy will probably address in his question.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've known now since November 2009 that collapse of civilization, only collapse of civilization, prevents runaway climate change. This is based on Tim Garrett's published research, and he's added a couple of papers to that. So I don't see a lot of government officials promoting the idea of collapse of civilization. I don't see Bernie and Hillary having a debate and proclaiming that they can collapse civilization faster than the other person and therefore vote for me, right?
Uh-huh.
So where does that take us if we're depending upon the government?
Well, you know, if we're depending on, I don't know how else we're going to do it if we don't have a government putting money into research. I don't know how else we're going to do it. I mean, otherwise, I think we're screwed. At least that's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, and that's...
Yeah, I think we'd go... I think we'd say that, in other words, we are screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
the name of our show is Nature Bats Last.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and I think that's where we're coming from. You know, we bring people on all the time. This is our 80th episode, and obviously everybody has different points of view about how to address something that is as immense as climate change, and, you know, uh-huh, you're out there doing work, and people are, you know, addressing it in different ways. But to try and get to the point where we're coming from in our particular show and our platform is that it seems to me that we were all born into a particular narrative, a particular way of living, mm-hmm, and that particular narrative is actually the thing that is destroying the planet. Mm-hmm. And in order to address that, we'd have to actually go to the root of what our narrative is. And the narrative seems to me to be that this is the only way to live, when clearly it's not. This is, mm-hmm, industrial civilization is a pretty new phenomenon if you look at it in the entire scope of human history. Mm-hmm. And I understand that when people go, what do you expect us to go live back in caves? Well, no, I don't expect people to go live back in caves.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't expect it to be just about us.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand what you're doing, and you're going out there, and you're talking to kids, and you're engaging them. And quite frankly, that's more than most people are doing or even getting in the door. So kudos to you, because you know, I'm not getting booked like you're getting booked. And you have an audience. So I'm just wondering, what challenges do you put in front of your audience? Do you think your audiences walk out challenged and going, well, maybe we have to do some things incredibly different?
Well, you got to understand, my show I try to keep things non-preachy because I think, you know, I don't do a heavy environmental show. There's little bits and pieces here and there. I'm trying to get people engaged, trying to get them interested. You know, if they see one of the things I do in my show, for instance, I show the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and how beautiful it is, and I do this in my book too, how beautiful it is, untouched by humans. Then we go over to Prudhoe Bay, and you can see what it's like there.
Right.
But I do it in bits and pieces. I don't do a heavy environmental show because I think students are going to shut down. They don't want to be preached to. You know, they are coming to see me voluntarily in a lot of cases. I mean, sometimes they might get extra credit to come see me. But there, a lot of them are coming there, you know, for the fun of it. And I make my show fun. They're going to laugh. They're going to laugh a lot. And so my whole thing is little bits and pieces. And I think that's just more effective than to, you know, lay down great big challenges for students. I just don't do that type of show.
Yeah.
And so I think it's the same thing with my books. You know, I try to make them fun. And interesting, and you know, then I may spend a couple pages, you know, on something a little heavier. But
right.
Again, I don't like to hammer people over the head just because I don't think it works.
Right. So you talk about more effective, and I understand the use of humor, but collapse of civilization isn't very funny, and neither is abrupt climate change. So how do you remain honest about the situation, the severity of the situation? And sprinkle in the jokes. What kind of effectiveness are you looking for, I guess? You want to be effective, but it seems like we have a huge predicament that we want to address at the same time. So I guess I'm wondering how we get
again,
there.
Again, you need to understand, I mean, in global warming and saving the planet, these are all very, very important things to me. But I also want to have an audience. And, you know, maybe there's a reason why I get booked so much, and that is because people are having fun. And so, again, I don't go overboard just because that's just not my thing. And it's and you know, I want people to buy my books. I want people to book me over and over again. And so, like I said, I sprinkle it in. I don't do a real, real heavy, you know, the planet is going to die type show. It's just not what I do.
So, you know, obviously, no matter what approach you take, there are challenges involved in your work. And so what are some of the challenges that you find in your own work, in your own approach?
Well, I mean, some of the challenges, obviously, is getting booked. You know, and that's part of it is, you know, it's with our current Congress, you know, continually doing budget cuts. And one of the things they love to cut is education.
Right.
And so, of course, that's a challenge is because, you know, when I started out speaking at colleges back in 2008, colleges had a lot more money. And they don't have quite as much money as they used to anymore. And one of the things they end up cutting is bringing in speakers. So, you know, I deal with that aspect as well. But, I mean, overall, you know, it's just, you know, part of any business. You've got ups and downs.
Right. You're listening to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. We're engaged in conversation with Marty Essen, award-winning author. Feel free to give us a call, a toll-free call at 888-874-4888. You can call with questions for Mike, myself, or Marty Essen at 888-874-4888. Marty, what or who inspires you? How do you keep going out there in the face of declining budgets, the constraints imposed by that, and a predicament that gets more challenging every day if you're following the news at all? So where do you seek inspiration?
My inspiration is when I go out, if I go down to South America and I see a really, really cool frog or really, really cool butterfly, I want my son and I want my granddaughter to be able to see that sometime as well, if they go down 15 or 20 years ago or from now or 30 years from now. And so, you know, I want, my inspiration is going out and doing this for them you know, as I'm doing it for them, obviously, hopefully, if those animals are there for them to see, they're going to be there for other people to see as well. And so that's my inspiration, is doing my little part to try to save endangered species from not existing anymore.
Right, absolutely. So, I mean, that being said, you've obviously done, you know, two books that have struck a chord with people, and obviously your presentation does. So what's next for you?
Well, you know, right now with my new book out, obviously I'm talking to you, so I'm out promoting my book. And, you know, this new book I'm really excited about, just because, you know, I think one of the things that makes people want to protect something is when they can feel, touch or feel or see it. And so that's one of my goals, is like taking, in my new book, I take them up to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in photos and in stories, and we have this adventure going down the Jago River all the way to the Arctic Ocean, and you can experience what that is like. And then we go back to Fairbanks, Alaska, we rent a car, and we head up following the Alaska pipeline all the way up to Prudhoe Bay, where you can see the cesspool that we've created because of our hunger for fossil fuels. And so, you know, I'm trying to make people, you know, by experiencing that and seeing it, then you're going to want to protect it. And so, you know, that's my goal with my books and my shows, is, you know, if they can't be there themselves, let's do the next best thing. And hopefully inspire people to not only protect, you know, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, but to protect the Everglades, any of these great places that are all over the planet.
Absolutely. I mean, your book is beautiful. You're a hell of a photographer, I'll give you that. Wow. I mean,
Thank you.
Some of these photos are just outstanding.
Well, you know, when my first book, Cool Creatures, Hot Planet, came out, it had photos in it as well, but it was in a photo insert. And there were about 80 photos in the first book. And the book did great, and it got wonderful reviews. But one of the things that I read reviews that everybody writes. I read every review I can get my hands on. And one of the things I would read in the reviews is, yeah, we really like the book, but we wish he had more photos. So mm-hmm. for my new book, Endangered Edens, we decided to make it really photo-intensive, put photos on literally every single page, printed it on glossy paper so the photos really jump out. And so kind of took a different approach with this new book, making it much more photo intensive. And I think especially, you know, with places like to be able to see, you know, on one page, see what the Arctic Refuge looks like, and the next page, see, you know, what the oil companies have done to an area just 150 miles to the west, what that looks like. I think that's important.
Yeah, it's a big contrast. Well, you should be proud of it. It's a beautiful book.
Thank you.
Well, that's Marty Essen. I thank you for being on our show. You can pick up his book, Endangered Edens, Exploring the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, Costa Rica and the Everglades and Puerto Rico. And it's at MartyEssen.com. And we thank you for your time, sir.
Hey, thank you both for having me on your show. It has been great. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Marty.
All right. Guy, I'm going to do the climate date update. And then we can talk a little bit about our visit with Doug Peacock.
Yes, and we're also taking your calls, 888-874-4888. Give us a call. First in the climate change update, a paper in the February 22nd, 2016 issue of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences reports that, consistent with earlier research on vertebrates, butterflies cannot keep up with rapid changes in habitat. The bottom line of the abstract, quote, "These results highlight a potentially common situation in changing environments. Evolutionary changes are not strong enough to fully compensate for the direct adverse effects of environmental change and thereby rescue populations from extinction," end quote. So if I were to phrase that a little bit differently, I would say that the habitat is changing so fast that organisms cannot keep up. Evolution is a process that requires many generations, and what we're seeing right now is changes in habitat that are playing out over the span of a few years, not many generations.
The question is, when won't we be able to keep up any longer?
Exactly. And I'm going there.
Uh-oh.
On the other hand, a paper in the February 2016 issue of Climatic Change indicates that snakes are doing fine.
Go snakes.
Go snakes. Specifically, I'll again quote from the abstract, quote, detailed projections of potential future range shifts on distributions of the medically most relevant species indicated that North American species ranges are likely to increase in the future, but mixed results were obtained for Latin American snakes, end quote. So habitat for butterflies is going away, driving the Lepidopterans to extinction. Yes, I said Lepidopterans right there on the show. But herpetofauna, such as snakes, are on the rise. For those of you who are interested in applying GMO technology to humans, skip the butterfly genes. We'll need genes from snakes instead.
I'm a snake.
According to... Really? You're not going to call in after that?
YouTube it.
What are you people up to?
YouTube, I'm a snake, and you'll see what we're talking about.
It's hilarious. Almost as funny as we are.
Yeah.
There's nature right outside our window right now. There's that black cat that's been hanging around, and he just caught a mouse.
Oh, that's the circle of life.
Which includes a dead rat.
All right.
According to a paper in the March 3rd, 2016 issue of the Cryosphere, the darkening of the Greenland ice sheet started becoming significantly less reflective of solar radiation from around 1996, with the ice absorbing 2% more solar energy per decade from this point. According to the abstract, future darkening is likely underestimated. You might have seen headlines in the mainstream media, perhaps including the one from the Washington Post, admitting the presence of a self-reinforcing feedback loop. A typical headline is, quote, Greenland's ice is feeding on itself. Mm-hmm. I've added this information to feedback number 6. And finally, on the climate change front, the first members of the genus Homo appeared about 2.8 million years ago. Several sources are reporting within the last week or so that atmospheric carbon dioxide levels are higher than they've been for 15 million years. Humans, 2.8 million years, carbon dioxide levels higher than they've been for 15 million years. That sounds like it might be problematic. If it seems problematic to you, I think you've been paying attention.
Insert joke here.
It's not funny.
No. This isn't funny stuff, guy.
I know. Maybe we should name our show differently.
This is serious stuff.
The Funny Hour.
The Funny Hour, right. All right, thanks. Hey, as always, I feel better.
I think you haven't been paying attention at all to anything I've been saying.
So last week after our show with Corny Morningstar, the next day we actually got to go and meet Doug Peacock, who we had on probably, what, about a month ago now?
Yeah, 3 weeks.
On the show. And if you remember, Doug it was the inspiration behind the I guess he's the main character in Monkey Wrench Gang.
Yeah.
So
yeah, George Washington and Hey Duke is Doug Peacock.
Is Doug Peacock.
Yeah.
And so, Guy, you had met Doug briefly before.
Yeah, I met him at a book signing that neither of us remembers. We couldn't even remember what bookstore it was in Tucson. So it was shortly after I moved to Tucson, probably 91 or 92.
Okay.
So that goes back a few years.
Right.
And he signed his first book, Grizzly Years, for me there. And we re-met, albeit virtually, about 8 years ago when Doug's son, Colin, was a student of mine. So I advised him and I had him in an independent study course. And Colin is really following his dad's lead in that he spends an enormous amount of time out in the wild and working hard to appreciate and protect what's left. Which is pretty cool. So that was a basis for a wonderful conversation as well.
Absolutely. When I was sitting there, and there's a book title, and you've told me this book title before, but I felt like I was speaking to sort of the last American man.
Yeah, that is a book title.
Yeah.
Written by, that Eat, Pray, Love woman. What's her name?
Oh, yeah.
Elizabeth. Anyway, her first book, which is a biography of Eustace Conway IV, is called The Last American Man.
Yeah.
And Eustace Conway IV is a guy who, when he's my age, so he's 55 or 56.
Oh, is that old?
Yeah, he's an old man now. But when he was young, when he was like 4 years old, he could pin a squirrel with a knife on a tree.
Wow.
He just sling a knife. Yeah. And he was building bows and arrows when he was 10 years old. And,
yeah.
You know, slaughtering all those pieces on the planet that he could get to. No, it wasn't quite like that, I guess.
But that's how I felt when I was speaking to Doug.
Right. Well, that's
like,
how I feel.
They don't make guys like this anymore.
Exactly. He is, in my opinion, an American hero.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to repeat the entire conversation, but there were – he was, as he put it on, I'm misquoting him, but the kind of the leading edge of some movements.
Yes. Like monkey wrenching.
Like monkey wrenching, right. And, you know, kind of doing things before they were hip, so to speak.
Right. And he actually mentioned, you know, people are getting arrested now for, quote, eco-terrorism.
Yeah.
The kinds of things he was doing 40 years ago.
Right.
And we talked to him about that. And he says, well, you don't want to do it now. You want to be the first one.
Right. Then you get out.
Then you get out while you can.
Right. Yeah. But just, I mean, a fascinating guy. And, I mean, you when you talk to him and you hear about the things and you read about the things that he has done, you're like, what am I doing?
Right.
I need to get my ass in gear. I just need maybe a little less writing.
And a little more getting out there.
Getting out there. And,
into the wild.
Right, right.
So. And you know, I mentioned when we interviewed him a few weeks ago that there are two people that I've read in my life that when I'm reading them, I want to put the book down and go hike.
Right.
Edward Abbey and Doug Peacock.
Doug Peacock, yeah.
And he's the kind of individual who actually inspires one to get out there.
Yeah.
Into the wild.
And, you know, you don't have to go hiking with grizzlies.
Right.
But, you know, we have, I feel somewhat ashamed. I live right next to the largest wilderness in the lower 48, and I've barely done any exploring in it. So I think he kind of pushed me, that conversation, to kind of get out there a little bit.
Well, and it's interesting because essentially every time I go into this wilderness nearby, right, I drive 3 miles up the road,
yeah,
and I take the same hike into the wilderness because it's so convenient.
Right.
It's just right there.
Right.
And so it's, you know, it in the adjacent wilderness, which it's separated only by a dirt road,
yeah,
that's 3 million acres.
Yeah.
And I've seen about 20 of them.
Yeah. Well, that's 19 more than I've seen. All right, we have a caller. We have Helene from Hawaii. Helene, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I actually have just been introduced to abrupt climate change about a year ago.
I'm sorry.
We're sorry, and congratulations.
And it was through Guy and Jennifer, and I appreciate that information.
I'm sure there's plenty of blame to go around.
Yeah, I know. What I see in Hawaii right now is there's something called a rapid Ohia death syndrome, and it is a fungus that is getting into all the native Ohia trees. Mm. And they're not sure where it's coming from. The root, the trunk of the tree gets the fungus inside. But anyway, I'm seeing our native trees dying, which is quite upsetting. It's spreading fast, and it's reached about 34,000 acres already. And I'm not sure should be relating this to abrupt climate change.
Well, that's a good question. Tree death is on my list of self-reinforcing feedback loops. Tree death triggered by ozone depletion is written about a lot by Gail Zawacki at Wits End, NJ, Wits End, New Jersey. So I think it's obviously not wise to attribute any single event to climate change, much less abrupt climate change. But there sure are a lot of strange things happening in the world that we have never observed in human history, including the spread of diseases that affect ours and other species. So I think it's probably likely that climate change is a contributing factor to the issue, the specific issue you're talking about. But I would be reluctant to go out and say that abrupt climate change is the only contributor to the spread of that particular disease.
Right. Well, this tree can sprout on open lava fields all by itself. So it can handle a lot of stress in the environment. But what's happening here now is we will have long droughts, then we will, and the soil, I notice, which a lot of us don't have soil, we just have cinder. the soil that I have brought in over the years is turning. It's turning very, very hard. And when I plant, I can see that there aren't any worms, which I guess you'd call fishing worms. Mm-hmm. That's what we called them in Pennsylvania. There aren't many bugs in the soil, but we're starting to have. I noticed the first 10 years that I was here, we had trade winds, strong trade winds all the time, and a lot of rain. Now we're having droughts or either downpours. And I can just see, and the invasive species have taken over. But what they're doing now, we have an albizia tree. I should know where it comes from. I can't think right now where it comes from. It's a big, beautiful tree, but it grows, oh, maybe at 20 feet a year or more. So that invasive tree has taken over, but now they are cutting down because it's very invasive, and it's affecting all the power lines. People are cutting down, and it's fragile. It falls over if we have a hurricane. Now we're cutting down a lot of the albizia trees, so I'm just concerned about our water, our aquifers, which I don't understand yet here. I don't think, I think all of our aquifers end up at the ocean, aside from coming down from higher elevations from the rainforest, but I see, like right now, we're on a catchment system. We don't have piped water in most of these subdivisions. I've run out of two tanks of water. I am having to water my trees, which I prefer not to do, but I guess last night I got a little frightened because I can't get water delivered. We don't have that many water delivery trucks. And so they have opened up water spigots for people to get drinking water, but I'm just afraid if we get stuck in one of these bad droughts and everything starts dying, that people don't realize what a serious situation we're in here on the Big Island. And more and more people keep moving here.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the problem, too, is civilization just keeps encroaching on the little bit that's left of Hawaii.
Right. And everything you mentioned is emblematic and symptomatic of abrupt climate change. You know, the droughts, obviously. And also when it does rain, the rains tend to have an increased amount of moisture and the rain comes even faster than it used to. So
that
feast or famine existence is all about abrupt climate change.
Yeah, and I'm thinking when those heavy rains come down, they take the nutrients, any nutrients that could be on the topsoil away. But yeah, I just see how fast population has grown by the billions, and I don't see how we can get out of this situation, like you're saying.
Yeah. Well, it's a predicament.
Yep,
it's not a problem. There's no answer at the back of the book here.
Yeah.
Not even if the book is Endangered Edens.
Nope. I'll create a slideshow. All right. Thanks for your call.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. We have Ken from Ohio. Ken, you there?
Yeah. Okay. Hey, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Yourself?
I'm doing all right. Just talking about doom.
Yeah. I just want to contribute to your last caller, too. I'm in Northeast Ohio, and you know, it's 70 degrees today. The forecast is like 65 to 70 next couple of weeks, and that'll probably just go right in the spring, whatever that consists of, which is good for me because I'm a self-employed lawn care landscaper, so I guess I get to start early this year. I don't know. So just like it's good for the snakes, right, I guess it's good for me.
Good news everywhere.
For now.
Yeah.
That conversation with Steve Essen seemed like it got a little awkward there. I don't know if it's just me or...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if, and I was going to ask him and I forgot, I don't know if he had listened to the show prior to, you know, what we really talk about on this show.
Right, it would surprise me if he had listened. His response is typical of most people within this culture, within this set of living arrangements. It's about the money.
And keep him happy.
Right. He wants to keep booking.
Yeah.
So for him, success means more. Just like it does for most people in this culture. More.
Yeah.
More is always better.
And if you bring up anything that's dark, everybody's afraid that people are going to shut down.
Right.
And I don't know, from our show, and you know, we get 2,000 people plus listening every week, and most of these folks, I believe, have come to a place of somewhat of acceptance.
Well, yeah, and when both of us present, we don't exactly hold back.
No. So, you know, I think...
Wait, is that why the room's always empty?
That could be.
I don't know.
I think people underestimate where we're capable of going, and once we get there, what we're capable of doing once we get to a place of acceptance and just get off this, you know, well, if we just elect this official or if we just pass this piece of legislation, so... I don't know. What do you think, Ken?
I have like one friend that'll listen to me when I talk about anti-civ message, because the rest of my friends are, you know, they're like, nah, maybe it'll come to that and we're headed that way, but they just don't want to hear it. And I probably would have more friends if, you know, I didn't come to this.
You're probably right, yeah.
I wouldn't know anything about having friends.
Yeah. Hey, at least you got one. That's more than I have.
Yeah. Well, he'll probably, he actually enjoyed the show with Doug Pete. Talk on, so I've got him to listen to quite a few shows. In fact, he was down in Miami, and I tried to get him to go. When you were down there about 6 months or a year ago, you did a talk, guy.
Oh yeah, when were you in Miami?
Yeah, that was December. That was just about 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyways, he wanted to, but he had to work, unfortunately. So
yeah, the old work thing gets.
Yeah, that money, it just keeps getting in the way.
Damn it.
Yeah, I'm off now, but it's like I said, I'm probably going to be starting pretty soon. It's really, last year this time, which was probably one of the colder winters, it might have been an aberration, but it was probably 20 degrees. It was one of the coldest winters, and obviously you can't go from one winter to the next. But if it's going down, man, it's you know, abrupt climate change. This is I don't know. I'm 49 years old, and I've never seen it this warm, this fast, and this sustained. We've had one warm day.
In our experience, it's people like you who are actually out there in the world who notice these things, right? People, desk jockeys who sit at their computer all day and clack at the keyboards, they haven't really noticed anything. So when you bring up the notion of abrupt climate change, they think you're just strange. But gardeners and landscape people
that have their hands in the dirt generally notice.
Yeah, I'm up there every day. And, you know, like it'll start early, but I'll probably get a drought like we did last year in July, August, and then I'll have a bunch of time off, which I'll be exhausted by then anyways. But, yeah, you see it, you know, all the little changes.
So are you born and raised in Ohio?
For 18, 19 years, and I went down to Florida and Colorado and out west and came back. But, we'll see, you know.
Yeah.
I hope it's not happening now, but I'm ready to go out and plant my garden. It's bizarre.
Well, we have a few gardeners here in the live studio audience, and one who is an epic gardener who's been doing this for a long time. She'll be a guest on the show in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And I think she planted a couple of weeks ahead of schedule this year. Yeah. She's shaking her head.
Yeah.
2 weeks ahead of schedule.
Yeah. I would do it if I wasn't worried about the frost. We always get one in the zone 5 up there, but I don't know. I could be ahead of everyone this year and be eating salad in 4 weeks. But anyway,
all right.
Well, good to talk to you. I've been listening to your show from the beginning, and just go out there and keep trying to talk to people. I don't know.
Thanks, Ken. Man, appreciate you listening.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks for the call. We're taking your calls today. The toll free number is 888-874-4888. And if you don't call, it's just Mike and I and the live studio audience.
So, yeah, we can ask the live studio audience some of their thoughts of what's been said today and what's happening. And anybody have any ideas, thoughts, comments, concerns about either our guests or our call from Helene from Hawaii or Ken in Ohio or Doug Peacock? Or
what you got? What you got?
What you got? Anything?
Because if you don't, I'm going to stick a microphone in your face.
I love it when people call in. You hear what's really going on, and that third party, you know, that lives there, that is experiencing climate change where they're at. that's hard to refute.
It is. I think it would be better. It would be nice if we had more people call in. I mean, we do get, you know, 2-3 calls, and we do call in shows. And the good news is they're generally from all over the country. But it is nice to hear folks that don't write about this stuff, don't speak about this stuff, and are actually living out there and experiencing, like Guy brought up, and you're checking your gardens and you're checking the waterfall because you have a catchment system and you're checking your soil. And those are the folks that we'd love to hear from, because those are the people that know what's going on. And in some cases, I don't know what's going on enough because I'm not out there gardening enough and I'm not paying attention to it. I write about this shit all the time and I speak about it, but you know, I'm not paying attention that, like, oh, there were more bugs last year. In actual things that are happening to people all around the world. And it seems to be pretty common for the people that we get that call in.
Right. Because I think they got to acceptance a lot faster than most people.
Yeah.
Because they're out there and experiencing the world. And that's why they got to acceptance. And so that's why they're willing to call in. We have Dave from Chicago on the line. Dave, what do you got?
Hey, Guy. Good to hear you guys on the radio again. I try to listen every week. But I'll tell you, this guy you had on for your, what I don't get about someone like that is he sounds very well-educated, well-traveled, writes all these books and stuff, but he just overlooks what's really going on in the world, and it's really kind of sad.
Well, I think he said it all, and, you know, I've run into this myself, and Guy has as well. I've tried to get in to the college market, and I'm not saying Marty did this, but I would have to sell my soul to get into the college market, and I would basically have to lie to them and tell them I'm going to talk about something else, and then walk in and actually talk about what I'm going to, you know, drop on them.
And that's a one-time gig.
I'm not going to get booked again, so... I understand where he's coming from. He wants to make a living, but yeah, you're right. He's made a choice of to only go so far because his audience will only allow him to go so far. And maybe, I don't know, maybe psychologically as well, he can only go so far.
Well, and also even on your show, his comments and stuff, I mean, the reflection that he won't even delve into what you guys talk about on your site, on your show, and this whole business that's appearing and unfolding before us. I mean, he completely evaded all of that and just kind of said, oh, I've got books to sell, and buy my book because I'm going back to South America or something, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I mean,
that was
he,
all.
He did pursue us, which is a rarity. Most I don't know if we had any other guests, really, maybe a handful, if that, that have pursued us.
No, I think there have been maybe one person who pursued us, and we get recommendations all the time for completely irrelevant people we should have on the show.
Yeah, and Marty pursued us, so I don't know, like I mentioned, I don't know if he'd ever read Guy's blog, if he'd ever listened to the show. To me, it doesn't seem like he did because, I mean, he was dropping how he thinks the government should fix things, and clearly that hasn't worked.
Which I know. The minute I heard that, I was thinking, oh, okay, yeah, sure, buddy. But, you know, I sent Ozzy Zehner's name. I don't know if you guys have contacted him, but he's an interesting guy. He might come on your show.
Okay. Who is he? What does he do?
Green Illusions. He wrote a book a few years ago, and it's along the lines of what you guys talk about, and he seems like a pretty open, receptive guy. He may enjoy coming on your show. I don't know.
Okay. Maybe send that again our way so we get the name right. You know,
okay.
Post-
All right. Yeah, Ozzy Zehner, Green Illusions, you know. Hey, okay. I'll send it.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, you guys, thanks again. Love the show, and I try to listen every week, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Thank you, Dave. We appreciate it.
Call again.
Yeah. I'm reminded of a quote from Oscar Wilde. I don't want to earn my living. I want to live.
Yeah.
There's a little difference there. Yeah. We have another Dave calling in from Pennsylvania. Dave, you're still with us?
Oh, I'm still here. Yeah, hi, Guy. It's a pleasure to speak to you finally. I've been following peak oil and all of these things since about 2000. And I've even been asked, well, early on to give a talk at the University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown about peak oil, but I declined it because all I would be doing was parroting what I've heard and read up to that point. But anyway, what I think I want to say is, since we've all been immersed and enveloped by this culture, and it's all we know, and really it is brand new relative to human existence.
Right.
How do you approach this where, you know, you're frank with people, but don't just turn their faces ashen like I did when I told, for example, the lady across the street and my sister-in-law about peak oil and all of its ramifications and so forth. And not to even mention, and this is before I even was aware of near-term human existence, or human extinction.
Yeah, I know, it's a great question. I think you try and do it through stories instead of dropping a lot of facts and figures on them. You know, we seem to be a storytelling species, and people relate to stories. That's what I try and do. I don't even call it civilization anymore to people. I just call it the narrative.
Yeah, I've heard it called that before too, because that's kind of what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you drop civilization on people, that's like 100 different definitions going through their heads about what does that even mean. And so I just tell, I refer to it as the story we tell ourselves about ourselves since the day we were born, and we just keep repeating it. And, you know, what would it look like if we started to challenge that story? And sometimes it doesn't look good.
Oh, yeah. The idea that we would change what we have always done in our lives, those of us born in the 20th century, in any way, shape, or form, is just absolutely unfathomable
right.
to most people. It's beyond right. their comprehension.
Yeah, and it's beyond their skill set or their, you know, the tools that they have in their lives. I mean, it's not like we can just you know, give up certain things and pull this off. I don't know anything. You know, I don't know how to hunt and gather. I don't know how to, you know, set a trap. I can't even identify most of the plants that are surrounding me today that I'm looking out a window at. There's a tree out there I see.
You made that trap.
I don't want to talk about that.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, that seems to be the common amongst everybody sitting here and listeners is, one, you know, you'd want to talk to people about this thing because you see it, and yet when we do, we have to be very delicate in how we do it because obviously we were all in that same situation for the first time when we heard the news and how it affected us, so... Yeah, I don't know. I've tried over the years of just really telling stories and trying to, you know, learn from the story. What is the lesson here? And instead of, well, you know, we're killing this many species a day, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, people just become overwhelmed.
Yeah, because it had taken me several years to really, really grasp this.
Yeah.
To get it down to my core.
Mm-hmm.
To know that this is not the way we've always lived, and we're right. not going to live this way. And what will people do as the trappings of this civilization and our whole way of living start to fall away, and they're not coming back?
Right. Yeah.
No. They're not coming back. We're going to die.
Yeah.
Whoops, there's the bummer.
Well,
that's why you get more bookings than I do.
And that's really what it comes down to, isn't it, Guy? It's about we are a death-phobic culture, like
yes.
many of our guests have said.
Yes. We don't have the conversation about death.
Death happens to other people and other species.
Right.
Certainly not us.
Not to us. Mm-mm.
Yeah, not us. I mean, a lot of us don't even think we get old, never mind die.
Well, I don't.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about there.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
I mean, I see people around
me. That other guy who gets old.
It doesn't apply to me.
Not me.
Do we need to cut this guy off?
I don't know, buddy. He just brought up the old thing.
Well,
thank you very much for your call, Dave. I have another climate change update.
Okay.
It just came across my...
Your news feed.
My news feed.
It came across the wire.
The wire in this case looked a lot like Facebook.
Right.
This from a paper that's in press with Geophysical Research Letters. So it just was accepted yesterday. There will be some slight editorial changes before it comes out. And here's the two lines from the abstract that are relevant.
Okay.
Quote, we find a significant human contribution to the probability of record-breaking global temperature events as early as the 1930s.
Wow.
It doesn't say wow. That was Mike.
Yeah.
By the way.
That'd be edited.
Since then, all the last 16 record-breaking hot years globally had an anthropogenic contribution to their probability of occurrence. End quote. So this goes back a while.
Yeah. Like a long while.
86 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah. Thanks for the math, Paul.
No problem.
All right. Well, that about wraps it up this week. Make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last, and the Progressive Radio Network, or join our Facebook group as well. It's naturebatslast.prn.fm, and post some questions that we can answer on the show. And continue to follow Guy's work at GuyMcPherson.com for further updates, essays, and speaking tours. We'll see you next Tuesday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern. Who's our guest?
Our guest is Jim Fetzer, Professor Emeritus, University of Minnesota, and he talks primarily about so-called conspiracies, that many of which have a factual basis. They're not just conspiracies.
Okay. And if you can't find us or didn't listen today, find us in the archives at prn.fm, stitcher.com, or rate us on iTunes. Thanks again to our listeners and to our guest, Marty Essen, and for Aprazin for his theme music. Until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end...
Nature Bats Last.